Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Your game plan, Student Athlete Edition, is officially open for enrollment. Given that schools and sports will be operating much differently this fall, I created an online program to supplement the academic curriculum and offer expert guidance to middle school, high school, and college student athletes. Check out makeyourgameplan.com to see why coaches and parents are already raving about it. If you enroll before midnight Eastern time on July 31st, you will save 30% and enjoy several exclusive bonuses. I repeat, if you enroll before midnight Eastern on July 31st, you will save 30% and enjoy several exclusive bonuses. Check out makeyourgameplan.com now.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to Season 4 of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr.
Let's do it.
In this season, I unpack the key stories and lessons from my book, Raise Your Game: High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best. If you've already read or listened to my book, please enjoy the reinforcement and reminders. Remember, repetition is not punishment. If this is all new to you, I hope you find this content helpful. You can order the full audiobook at audible.com or wherever audiobooks are sold. You can also order the paperback or hard copy version for you or your entire team or organization at raiseyourgamebook.com. In today's episode, we explore Chapter 14 from the team section, which focuses on communication. My father told me it doesn't matter who is doing the selling or who is doing the buying. It's the human connection that counts. Tim Draper, venture capitalist. An effective player, coach, or teammate is interested in connection. He learns how to connect and is constantly looking to hone these skills, building bridges to those above, below, and across from him. Communication requires learning the subtle art of breaking down walls, not building them higher. It reminds me of a saying I've heard a few times, which rings absolutely true. Don't call people out. Call them in. Successful teams talk to each other, not at each other. Communication is essential for any team, and it's not just about the information imparted from one person to another. It's much larger than that. It's about stepping outside yourself, your own needs and wants, and seeing the bigger picture. How we communicate is literally how we interact with the world around us. It's how people know who we are and how we know who they are. It's so basic that we forget it. I only know how you feel if you tell me. You only know how I feel if I tell you. Misunderstanding. Our words are incredibly powerful, so we must choose them carefully. One word that is often used to help strengthen a connection is understand. I understand how you are feeling. I understand what you are going through. I understand why you did that. But I actually believe it does the opposite. No matter how well intended, telling someone you understand a feeling is condescending and patronizing. It causes the listener to put up walls, creating the very separation it's trying to bridge. Saying you understand is essentially an effort to express empathy, but it doesn't. It often comes off as disingenuous. You can understand facts, but you can't truly understand a person's feelings. Even if you've gone through something similar, the context and details will always be different. Respect them enough to give them their individual experience and impressions. So instead of telling them you understand how they are feeling, tell them you can appreciate how they are feeling or respect what they are going through. They will respond to your honesty and will be grateful for what they will see as genuine sympathy. Getting outside ourselves. Though we all learn to talk at a young age, effective communication is a skill that develops over time. Like any skill, it can be learned and improved with proper practice and repetition. And once you learn how to do it, it can open up doors to you that you always thought were closed. This goes for relationships, and it goes for the workplace. For this book, I interviewed former NBA player and current ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Williams, one of the most impressive professionals and people I have ever met. Growing up, Jay learned how to dribble using a flat basketball. He couldn't ask his hard-working mother for a new one, so he learned on what he had. As it turned out, this gave him a huge benefit in the long run. It was those hours of practicing with a flat ball that helped him become an enormously skilled dribbler. It's a fitting story. Throughout his life and career, Jay has found a way not just to bounce back from adversity, but to bounce back stronger. Twice in his life, after major setbacks, he has had to build himself up and has reached the top of his field. As a National College Player of the Year and champion at Duke, as the number two pick in the NBA draft, and now one of the premier college basketball analysts in the business. After Jay's NBA rookie season, a motorcycle accident almost took his leg and ruined his career. Williams had to learn how to walk again. In his book, Life is Not an Accident, a memoir of reinvention, he wrote openly about the emotional toll that the grueling surgeries and therapies had on him. It took 9 operations for him just to be able to lift his foot off the ground. After a series of setbacks and getting lapped by old ladies in the swimming pool, Jay was ready to give up. He hit rock bottom and went into a spiral of addiction and suicidal impulses. It took over 3 years to build himself back, in body, mind, and spirit. Though he made it far enough back for a cup of coffee with the Nets, he was never the same player. But dealing with adversity is what Williams was built for. He's a personal inspiration to me because of his ability to overcome what he needed to and subsequently excel in multiple fields. The wisdom Jay carries today is made up of the kind of diamonds that come only from heavily pressured coal. When I interviewed Jay, he zeroed in on one quality above all else that helped make him who he is. He admitted that he had trouble finding his voice when he was younger and credits his success with his ability to get outside of himself and connect with others. In a word, communication. Jay admitted to me that he was a horrible communicator, and when he was younger and when he got to Duke, Coach K forced me to get outside myself. It was the best learning experience I ever could have gone through because it forced me to convey my thoughts even when times were difficult. Coach K has long been a huge promoter of honest and consistent communication. His players always had to say each other's names during drills as they passed the ball, which instilled the behavior into their brains and into their game. Not only was communication necessary at Duke, but Coach K framed it as an attitude issue. When a player was too quiet or introverted on the court, Coach K would attribute it to selfishness. Think about it. When you're not communicating with your team, who is in the dark? You always know what you're thinking, so it may not matter to you. But to those around you, it's poison. When you do not communicate, you internalize everything, Williams told me. You focus all of your internal attention on yourself and what you did wrong in that moment, and that's a very selfish mentality. Williams learned there were times at Duke when he would get caught up in a blown play, lost in his head, when the right thing to do would have been focusing on the next play. He should have been communicating with his teammates and paying attention to what they wanted to accomplish, not what he wanted for himself. Jay credits Coach K for sitting him down and showing him these things on tape. When Jay watched footage from his game, he noticed how after a turnover, his body language would show he was focused on himself to the detriment of the team for the next possession. On the court, it created a negative cycle. However, seeing himself do it and understanding how it hurt the team helped Jay turn things around. The lessons Jay learned about communication apply off the court as well, to business and to life. The ability to communicate to somebody regardless of the situation is what business is, Jay told me. You're actually taking the time to assess the person you work with and recognize their strengths and their weaknesses, and then cater what you have to say through that particular lens. Jay also brings heart to all his interactions. It's important that our relationships, even in business, are not just transactional, as he explained to me. When you meet somebody, he asked, are you instantly going to a place of what can this person do for me and what can I do for this person? And that's the limit of the relationship. Or is it personal? Are you taking a second to understand what this person is going through? Those moments when you come back to that person in time, they'll then go an extra length to help you with what you need. That's business 101. Jay reiterated what I firmly believe. Business, all business, is not about the service or the product. It's about people. Finally, communication acts as a necessary and healthy release valve. Whether in relationships, at the office, or in the public eye, Jay told me, when we're not communicating, we are letting our frustrations build and spill over into the next interaction, and then on to the next. Communication is a way of checking in with those around us, but also with our own feelings. It's a way to make sure they don't get bottled up, ignored, and left to fester. When we communicate with our team, we open ourselves up to their insight, to their empathy, to their support. Our thoughts create our reality, but we have to remember that this isn't an objective reality. We spend all of our lives inside our own heads, but we forget that no one else knows what's going on there. Talking on the court. Good teams talk. Great teams communicate. Hall of Fame coach Bob Hurley often closes his eyes for a minute in the middle of practice so he can hear what is going on. He wants to hear shoes squeaking and players talking because it tells him things that his eyes can't see. The key is making successful communication a habit. For basketball players, I've developed a rating system to help evaluate and improve communication. 0 means silent. This is unacceptable at any time. 1 means noise, players who clap their hands. 2 means contact, players who give high fives and fist bumps. 3 is generic talk, players who shout phrases like, good job and come on, pick it up. 4 specific talk, players who use names and examples like, nice cut, James. 5 directing, players who are coaches on the court. They constantly say it all. Coaches should rate the 5 players on the court, with the goal of the total reaching at least 20, and strive to get all players to a level of 4 or 5. They should encourage players who talk on both ends of the floor and reward players who vocally encourage teammates when they make a great play and correct teammates when they make a mistake. Putting concrete measurements on a team's communication is one way to make sure it's happening at a rate and intensity that is fruitful. Otherwise, you're just assuming that your team is communicating enough, which is a common way for it to slip through the cracks. Open communication. Effective communication isn't always pleasant. Getting along just to get along can actually backfire. If issues that are causing problems are left unaddressed, the team is not being served at all. Those unspoken matters are going to grow and expand while they sit in the dark. Great teams do not hold back from one another. They are unafraid to air their dirty laundry. Think about it. How else is it going to get clean? They admit their mistakes, their weaknesses, and their concerns without fear of reprisal. It is only when team members are truly comfortable being exposed to one another that they begin to act without concern for protecting themselves, management expert Patrick Lencioni wrote in The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. Communication is not just about support and kindness. Sometimes it's about progress and productivity. A study of executives from various industries found that when they were asked whether they had ever had issues at work that they had not voiced, fully 85% said that they had at some point felt unable to discuss their concerns. Almost 9 out of 10 employees were afraid to voice their issues. That is a huge problem. Ray Dalio, who manages the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates, and is one of the 100 richest men on earth, practices what he calls radical honesty and radical transparency. It's the philosophy behind a company that has become astoundingly successful. Radical truthfulness is just put everything on your table and get past it, he explained to an interviewer. It's a way to ensure that people know who is getting ahead or not and why. This strategy conserves energy for the things that truly matter, rather than creating an environment of suspicion, insecurity, and confusion. Imagine a workplace you've been, or are still, a part of. How much time and energy was spent on what the boss was thinking about your performance, what this colleague was saying behind your back, and so on? Think about what a drain on morale that was. Think about how open and honest communication would have given you peace of mind while also conserving your time and energy. In a visionary move, Dalio has decided to knock down those walls in an effort to set up and expand communication lines. A company should be committed to keeping everything out in the open, lest employees feel more passive cogs than active members of an organization that values them. Remember, people crave that feeling of being wanted and needed. What needs to be said. Hearing what people think of us is not always the easiest thing to sit through, but it is absolutely essential for our own growth as well as the team's. Recently, I went through something of a boot camp in this very skill. I participated in a CEO mastermind retreat in Vail, Colorado. Part of the retreat was an exercise where each participant had to spend time on what was called the hot seat. The goal of the exercise was for each person to be as open and as vulnerable as possible. Whoever was in the hot seat had to share his biggest current challenge, personal or professional. The other members of the group were tasked with listening empathetically and offering honest feedback, creating a safe environment for the person in the hot seat. Once he was done, he was allowed only two responses to the feedback. Thank you, or can you please clarify that? He was not allowed to respond, defend, justify, or dismiss. During my session in the hot seat, I had an incredibly difficult time. We all naturally want to deflect, explain, and protect ourselves from harm. That is our instinct. But I gained so much more by not being able to do any of that. It was like having my hands tied behind my back. Rather than being a handicap, it actually gave me better balance. I was far more open than I would have been in a regular conversation. The practice was incredibly powerful and provided the kind of fertile environment for personal breakthroughs. Another powerful team exercise we learned to bring back to our respective workplaces. Everyone on the team is given a handful of index cards and a pen. On the front of each card, they write down specific traits. Some positive ones: hardest worker, most talented, mentally toughest, and most coachable. Some negative ones: laziest, most selfish, and most distracted. Then on the back of each card, they write down one teammate's name that they feel epitomizes the trait. Again, the writing is done in private and is 100% anonymous. When it's over, someone collects the cards and tallies the stats to reveal the results. If 9 out of 12 players think you are the most selfish, guess what? If your most talented is your laziest and most selfish, you're going to have a problem. If the team's hardest worker is also the most talented and most coachable, things are looking good. An exercise like this is actually forward-looking. So much of our behavior is actually changeable. Often we just need the push or the spark. An exercise that lays out what our coworkers really think of us may just be what we all need. Confrontation is simply meeting the truth head-on. Coach K. 6 steps to mastering tough conversations. Effective coaches and leaders stand firm in telling their people what they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear. Trust and truth go hand in hand and feed each other. You have to tell the truth to earn trust. And you must have trust that the person is going to tell you the truth. Remember, time never makes tough conversations easier. Confront issues early and directly. Step 1. Create a safe environment. This is an ongoing process, and it's mandatory if there is going to be the necessary trust required for a tough conversation to be productive and smooth. Think about the difference in food quality between something cooked in an oven and something given a minute in a microwave. Real relationships take time. Step 2. Keep it professional. It's important not to swerve into the personal. Confront issues and behavior, not people. Trust they can handle it and don't assume you know what their responses will be. Never initiate when angry, frustrated, or disappointed, as you are more likely to lose your professionalism in these emotional states. Step 3. Be respectful. Remember, in person is better than on the phone. On the phone is better than email. Email is better than text. Give the person the respect they deserve. Be honest and direct, but with respect and tact. Reduce innate barriers and defensiveness through word choice such as, "Can I bounce something off you? We need to discuss something important because I care about you. This feedback is to help you." Step 4. Watch your language. Feelings are always valid. Actions are not. Just because something is understandable doesn't mean it's acceptable. Never assign blame. Use I statements. "I'm feeling" is better than "you make me feel." Step 5. Empathize and clarify. Ask for their perspective and then listen. Do not interrupt. Allow them to have a full response. Specifically ask for clarification if needed. Affirm and validate their feelings and intentions without judgment. Step 6. End strong. Thank them and acknowledge them for having the conversation. Don't forget to take adequate time to process and let emotions settle. After an appropriate length of time, formally follow up to resolve and move forward. Positive communication. Here's another valuable exercise you can implement with your organization. At the end of a meeting, everyone goes around the room and signifies something specific that they appreciated about a colleague. "Jody, you were an empathetic listener today, and I appreciate it." Then each person says something they feel they did well. I feel I did a nice job with breaking down our team's task into manageable parts. Finally, they share something the team did as a whole. No generalities, be specific in your comments. The team communicated effectively about the standards needed to get this project done. The key to this working is that the communication is genuine and detailed. Whoever leads the session cannot let anyone off the hook if they say, "Alan did a good job." Ensure everyone is digging deep and offering specific feedback. There are a few reasons why this exercise is so effective. Number one, when you praise someone specifically in front of his peers, it's a great bonding mechanism. Number two, with a brush of humility, it gives you the confidence and opportunity to acknowledge something you're proud of. It is not conceited or arrogant to acknowledge something you did well. Be proud of the work you do. Number three, this type of behavior feeds and supports the collective. Mismatch. Keep in mind the power of negative communication. There is something called Gottman's ratio, named for the psychologist who coined it. A negative interaction has 5 times the impact of a positive interaction. That's a wildly uneven match. So keep in mind the power of your negative communication and how it will throw your relationships out of balance. You don't have to like everyone with whom you work, but you do have to care about them. Caring is an act of will. It is a choice. You can choose to help, assist, and serve someone that you may not particularly like. That is a standard of which elite teams are made. The 3 most powerful things you can say to a colleague or a teammate: I got your back. I believe in you. I care about you. Thermostats. Communication helps to set and maintain the tone of an organization's culture. As legendary motivational speaker Les Brown used to say, it's the difference between a thermostat and a thermometer. A thermostat sets the temperature, and a thermometer simply reads it. A thermostat dictates the environment, while a thermometer just reacts to it. In his prime, NBA Hall of Famer Steve Nash was a thermostat. His energy and enthusiasm were every bit as valuable as his shooting and passing skills, which were considerable. In 2004, the year Nash won the first of 2 back-to-back MVP awards, he led the league in 2 statistical categories: assists and touches. Yes, touches. He led the league in high fives, fist bumps, and pats on the back. How do I know? Because some researchers at UC Berkeley kept track. They were conducting a formal study to see if there was a correlation between showing enthusiasm and winning. The Suns even had an intern count Nash's touches during 1 game. The number of times Steve Nash touched a teammate as an act of enthusiasm in a 48-minute game? 239. Nash credits his father for his team-oriented approach because he had a different reward system. Nash Sr. instilled a teamwork mentality in Steve as a young athlete, valuing his passing over his scoring and sometimes letting him and his brother score if they passed back and forth, but never if someone tried to take it on his own. Jay Billis told me it was Dean Smith at UNC who first instituted the point-to-the-passer gesture. It was a way, after a made basket, for the scorer to show appreciation to the passer. It's something you now see all over basketball courts, as common as a high five or a fist bump. It even led to what UNC called the Bobby Jones rule. Even if you miss an easy shot, when the pass is good, thank the passer. Businesses have taken a cue from the point-to-the-passer approach and have had remarkable success. For instance, Zappos has taken interpersonal communication to an impressively high level in their offices. It is one of their core values, and their actions and reward systems reflect that. Each month, employees are encouraged to single out a colleague for a $50 co-worker bonus award. In addition, the physical headquarters itself is designed to encourage communication between colleagues. CEO Tony Hsieh closes the side doors of headquarters during office hours to create collisions among employees, unplanned encounters that he feels are necessary to create a tight group. Remember that community and communication derive from the same word. They feed each other. Squad goals. Another benefit of communication is it acts as a collective form of motivation. Scientists recommend that when you're going on a diet or trying to quit smoking, you should tell others. Putting it out there creates a motivational environment in which you're setting yourself up for success. Daniel S. Schwartz, chief executive of Restaurant Brands International, which owns Burger King, Popeyes, and others, posts his own goals on the wall in his office, along with his progress, for all his employees to see. He asks his employees to do the same. There is a power in simply stating what you, individually or as a team, hope to achieve. It brings it to life, gives it a name and a presence, making it all the more real and possible. It's a version of Tom Izzo's ritual of practicing cutting down the nets. Author Daniel Coyle has written best-selling books on team culture and currently works as an advisor for the Cleveland Indians. In The Culture Code, Coyle used examples from business to sports to the military to pinpoint the three characteristics that help a group cohere. He found them to be a feeling of safety, a sharing of vulnerability, and a clear understanding of a larger goal. Not surprisingly, all three of these traits share a common denominator. They require communication. If companies don't intentionally open the lines of communication, they are effectively keeping them closed. Most employees' default position is not to speak up to their boss, for obvious reasons. So unless this kind of behavior is clearly encouraged, it is being discouraged. If you're in charge, you might be thinking, "But my people always know my door is open for them to talk to me. I don't need to tell them that." Guess what? You're wrong. Let them know. At Pixar a few years back, President Ed Catmull started to notice that employees seemed to be censoring themselves more and more around the bosses, which he felt was both a symptom of a larger problem and a drag on the company's mission. A creative environment simply cannot function without free-flowing communication, and creativity was Pixar's bread and butter. So Catmull did something about it. He brought together the whole company for what was called Notes Day, a session where everyone was free to weigh in on everything. The airing out of employees' pent-up thoughts and feelings was so productive that soon the meetings became regular occurrences. Don't mistake communication for constant agreement. In fact, if there isn't some conflict in your team's communication, you're probably holding things back, being inauthentic, or not doing it right. According to entrepreneur and author Margaret Heffernan, we should see conflict as a type of thinking. Great teams are comfortable with clashes as long as they're respectfully communicated, productive, and not personal. Conflict itself isn't negative. It depends on what kind it is and how it is handled. Patrick Lencioni, who studies what makes businesses work and fail, echoed this. All great relationships, the ones that last over time, require productive conflict to grow. It's not really about the conflicts that you have. It's how those conflicts are resolved and whether or not hashing them out solves their initial cause. Size matters. No matter how hard you try, the size of a group can reach a point where it's impossible to connect and communicate. Where you can, keep the groups and the meetings small. At Amazon, Jeff Bezos famously has something called the two pizza rule. No team should be bigger than two pizzas can feed. The main reason? The small size serves communication. Think about how large meetings stifle open communication and why that is. How much time is spent off topic? How many side conversations inevitably get going? How effective can a large group actually be? Is anything ever really decided? Under Steve Jobs, Apple had a similar concept for meetings called the small group principle. No one was allowed in the meeting who wasn't necessary. Steve Jobs wasn't the kindest person about this rule, and he frequently kicked people out of rooms when he felt they didn't need to be there. Though the method might be harsh, and I can't subscribe to Jobs' approach, the intention was correct. It's not like letting them stay in those meetings was any better. It doesn't value them since they could be doing something else. It's why Steve Jobs continually called Apple the biggest startup on the planet. The small group principle remained, even as it became one of the most influential companies in the world. Listen to learn, don't listen to reply. John C. Maxwell. Listening skills. As I've stated, communication is not just about talking. In fact, I'd argue that a more important component is listening. But not just listening. Active listening. Attentive listening. Most people simply pretend to listen while they're formulating their response. You need to actively listen with an empathetic ear to clearly understand the person's perspective and point of view. Is this how you listen? How often are you just waiting to talk? World-class leaders and elite sales professionals have mastered the art of active listening. They know that telling is not selling, and that 9 times out of 10, the best answer they can give is actually another question, a question that dives deeper and refines clarification. Communication goes far beyond words. There is tone, eye contact, body language, and all kinds of nonverbal cues that we unconsciously share in our conversation. But just because it's unconscious doesn't mean we can't work on it. Remember to listen with your eyes. Lock in your feet, hips, shoulders, and head. Let your colleagues know that their thoughts and feelings are important by giving them your time and attention. Hearing is involuntary. If someone claps their hands or blows a whistle, you hear that. You don't have a choice. But listening is voluntary. You choose whether or not to be present and to actively listen to what someone is communicating to you. Listen to their words, but also follow their nonverbal cues. Listening is a skill. And how do you get better at any skill? Purposeful, consistent practice. You get reps. Thankfully, there is no shortage of opportunities to practice listening in this world. Your kids love to talk. Your spouse loves to talk. Your friends love to talk. Your coworkers love to talk. So take advantage and practice active listening every chance you get. The incredibly shrinking attention span. No matter who we are, we all want to feel genuinely listened to. And in recent years, that innate desire has gotten much harder to fulfill. In 2002, before the handheld device and social media revolution had taken hold, the human attention span was 12 seconds. In 2018, it is now hovering around 8 seconds, and it's only going to get shorter. A major pillar of teamwork is being able to transfer a thought, idea, or emotion to someone else and get them to understand clearly how you're feeling and what you're thinking. It's not as easy as it used to be, but it's essential. Former NBA coach and current TV analyst Jeff Van Gundy has said that good teams have ELO communication, early, loud, and often. Consistent communication is the key. Thoughts and feelings are constantly fleeting and in flux. The more you can communicate, the more you ensure everyone's on the same page. The more open the communication, the more cognizant you'll be of dissent, role conflict, and disunity. It's how you find that poisonous stuff and nip it in the bud. Communication brings issues to the surface, sometimes intentionally and sometimes unintentionally, but both are valuable. One of the most dangerous things an organization can have is mixed messages. Think of the old game of telephone you played as a kid. If I tell you something and you misinterpret and run with it, the problem multiplies. That many more people have no idea what I actually said. It happens all of the time, and it's an example of how a single incident of miscommunication can cause havoc. College coaches often tell me that the biggest difference between college and high school players is not skill level or athletic build. It's their ability to communicate. Most high school players are nowhere near the type of effective communicators they need to be for a successful college basketball career. They have to learn to talk often and with purpose. It takes practice. Watch any clip of a game where LeBron James is mic'd, and you'll hear a constant running commentary that will make you realize what a phenomenal floor leader he is. It's practically exhausting to watch. Phil Jackson once ran an entire practice scrimmage with the Lakers where the players were forbidden to talk. The team was having communication issues, so he instituted the no-talking rule and came down hard, sidelining or giving wind sprints to anyone who spoke. He wanted them to see how hard basketball is when you don't talk. A million little things go wrong for a team who can't talk to each other. When a player can't warn a teammate, screen coming, or switch, or yell out who he's guarding, it's like playing with a hand tied behind his back. The players quickly got Jackson's message. Communicating with legends. One of the highlights of my career was having dinner with legendary coach Bobby Knight after a Nike championship basketball clinic where we were both speakers. I've always been a fan of Knight's and have read all of his books, so it was an unbelievable experience to actually dine with him. He is a brilliant storyteller with a remarkable memory. He remembered incredibly specific details, like the name of the referee who made a crucial call during a game from over 40 years ago. Knight continually beat the drum on the importance of listening and communication. At any point during practice, he suggested, call a timeout. Huddle the players and give them 4 or 5 specific instructions. Then send them back on the court. Wait 15 seconds and then call them back in. Ask them to write down the things you ask them to do. It is scary how little they will recall. Players must be able to carry out simple instructions from the bench to the court. If they couldn't, then they couldn't play for Knight. Until 2008, Bobby Knight had the most wins in NCAA men's basketball history. That was when he was overtaken by coach Don Meyer. Meyer is one of the winningest coaches of all time, yet most fans have never heard of him because he chose not to coach at the Division I level. Before he passed away in 2014, I spoke alongside coach Don Meyer on two different occasions. I had the privilege to watch him speak and to talk privately with him, which was a real honor. Though he had been slowed down by cancer toward the end of his life, Meyer was the epitome of a servant leader, overwhelmingly humble, genuine, and authentic. A lot of the key things he preached in his talk came down to communication. A scared team is a quiet team, he said. Great teams are vocal and communicate. His advice to young coaches? Let your players know these two things every day. Here is one thing you are doing well and why, and here is one thing you can do better and how. Coach Meyer was a coach's coach. While he absolutely loved his players, he was always a tremendous resource to other coaches at every level and at every point in their careers. He was such a powerful speaker, blending humor with wisdom with tangible X's and O's. My hand was cramped from taking so many notes during his talk. But what really blew me away was that during my talk later in the day, he sat in the front row and took notes throughout. At that point in time, he had been coaching longer than I had been breathing, yet he was giving me the full attention and regard he expected of others. As successful as he was, he knew there was still more to know, and he loved learning. It also communicated to me that I was worth his time and respect. At his level, if he could still do that, then we all can. The best way to persuade others is with your ears. Dean Rusk, former U.S. Secretary of State. Custom communication. We don't know what we're saying until we know how someone hears it. Communication is also about feedback, making sure there is a two-way exchange of ideas, perceptions, and feelings. Otherwise, it's like screaming down a well. Steve Kerr, this is not the Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr, former Goldman Sachs executive and researcher on leadership development, once offered a fantastic metaphor. He told author Jeff Colvin that practicing without feedback is like bowling through a curtain that hangs down to knee level. You can work on technique all you like, but if you can't see the effect, two things will happen. You won't get any better, and you'll stop caring. Customize how you talk to each person. Determine what type of communication is most appropriate for the situation and the individual. When is a private chat the right way? Or when is addressing the team as a whole more effective? When is it appropriate to send out a mass text? And when should you talk to each person individually? Today's technology allows us to communicate any way we want, so it's important, especially for young people, to develop interpersonal skills. Look people in the eye. Have face-to-face conversations. Don't hide behind text messages. People defer to the easiest method of communication instead of the most appropriate. It's easy to text a coach and say you can't make practice because it's one-sided. You don't have to deal with the other person on the other end of the exchange. I'd argue that is not communicating at all. Someone once told me that if you find yourself saying, I've told you 100 times, and the person you're talking to is still causing the problem, maybe consider that you are the problem. Take ownership of the issue. Maybe the problem is on your end. Why else would you have to say something 100 times? The proof is in the pudding. Your message isn't getting through. The communication issue is on your end. Make sure you adjust so that the next time you say it, the 101st is the last. Key point. A team doesn't know what it doesn't share with each other. Whether through positive reinforcement, constructive criticism, or tone and body language, great teams understand the value of communication. Remember, communication ensures that teams will catch dissent, role conflict, or disunity before it becomes unmanageable. Our ideas and emotions are constantly in flux. The best communication is open, honest, and consistent. Don't forget that communication is about trust. The most important and most often forgotten form of communication is listening. Listen with empathy and purpose. Think about the most appropriate form of communication for a given person or situation rather than the most convenient. Customize and individualize what you say and how you say it.
Well, that's it for me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure to join my conversations at Alan Stein Jr. on all major social platforms and go to allensteinjr.com to subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. I look forward to helping you raise your game.